Hi, listeners. We have Sarah here today. She is the author of Our NICU Journey, here to talk to us today about her NICU experience and what inspired her to write a book. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You had three NICU babies.
Yes.
All right. Do you want to tell us about your experiences?
Sure. Where to begin? So my first pregnancy, I got pregnant with twins, which runs in the family. I have polycystic ovarian syndrome, and you know, my mom was just saying it's bound to happen to someone in the family, and I just got to be that lucky person.
You drew the lucky straw.
Yes, but I did not draw the lucky straw through pregnancy. So I was sick the whole time, and it was uncomfortable. And I'm sure many moms of multiples would say the same thing. There's just not a whole lot of room for all of those babies. But other than that, things went well, and they were healthy until one day I woke up and had some bleeding. And I was about 28 weeks pregnant. And my husband insisted that I go to the triage. So we went into the hospital, and they kind of just looked at us and said, "Why are you here?" And I'm like, "Well, I have some bleeding. I'm not really sure. I don't think it's a big deal, but maybe." And they kept checking us. They hooked all the baby monitors up, and so I started progressing very quickly. I went from, you know, starting to dilate to, you know, 5, 6 centimeters, 8 centimeters. Oh, you're fully dilated. And I think they had lost some of the heartbeats. And so we ended up going to the emergency room very quickly and delivering our twins at 28 and 3, I think is what they were. So it was just spontaneous labor. I didn't really have an explanation for us as to why it happened. It just happened, but it was terrifying.
Yeah, so the whole delivery experience, it was terrifying.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it went from everything's kind of okay to let's move you down the hall and hopefully we can just slow things down and keep them in, to we made it to the next room and they're like, the babies are coming right now. And my husband turned green. I never saw a person turn green before. he was just like, I gotta go. And I'm like, what do you mean you gotta go? He's like, I gotta go make a phone call. So he called all of our families while we were rushing down the hallway, and he made it just in time for them to come out. So it was, I think they said it was non reassuring heartbeat.
Yeah. We see that, often with twins, they're born early. It's almost like your body just says, "Hey,
if they're done,
yeah, it's time."
But it was so pitiful. So, I do remember, going down the hallway, and our OB was on her way, and the on-call doctor basically said, you know, she just kept saying, "I'm so sorry," over and over and over again. And then she told me a story about, you know, she had a premature baby and the things that happened with her premature baby, which were terrifying. And all I could think was, this is not, I know you're trying to be helpful and supportive, but this is making it worse.
Yeah, hearing those stories while you're going through it, I think can be.
Yes, while you're about to meet your children. So I will say, just be a little mindful.
Yes.
Of the things that you say to your parents, I guess, during, and after delivery, because it's terrifying, especially when you don't know what's going on and things are happening so quickly. But so we had our girls, and they came out bruised all over and just teeny tiny and pitiful. And I think they had tried to let me see them before they took them, but I think they wheeled the box in, like, "There's your kids," and then they took them away. And that was so hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to just be like, all right, bye. And, you know, they had to go work on them and take them down to the NICU. So I think they told me one baby's Apgar score, which I did not know what that was at the time. One was a 3 and the other one was a 2. And I think after a few minutes, they had checked it again and they both went up to 7.
Yeah.
So they took them down there. I know they had to intubate both of them. And I believe shortly after they had taken it out, because they were breathing pretty well. But, they did not, they did not look what I expected them to look like.
Yeah.
And, I think they got, you know, surfactant for their lungs. I know they gave me, you know, the steroids and the magnesium, which feels like you are on fire.
Yes. Not. Yes.
They told me after I started feeling, I'm like, it's getting hot in here. And they're like, oh yeah, by the way. And I'm like, that would have been great to know before you put it in me.
I've had people tell me it, you don't just feel hot. You feel like you are on fire.
I did. I like every part of me felt like it was burning and you can't stop it.
Yeah.
It would have been nice to have a little heads up.
Yeah, somebody could have just handed your husband a winter jacket and turned the air conditioning way, way down.
That would have been excellent. Yes, but you know, in the grand scheme of things, you just want your kids to be okay. I think moms would walk through fire to make sure that their babies are okay. So
100%.
My daughters were. 2 pounds and 13 ounces, and the other one was 2 pounds, 15 ounces. So they were on the bigger side, thankfully.
Yeah.
40 and 39 centimeters. And we had a couple rough weeks in the NICU. And after that, I think things started to look up.
Good, good. It sounds like they were good sizes. I can just remember a neonatologist looking at a baby and saying, this baby is well nourished, and thinking to myself, this baby looks like a little bird that fell out of its nest, like well nourished. But they were good sizes.
Yes, they were. I birthed big babies, we found out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I got a perspective early on. So the NICU that we were admitted to was a level 4 NICU. So they were amazing. We went to UAB in Birmingham, and they had their stuff together. I give them a lot of credit. It was amazing at all the things they did when they, I did the recovery after our C-section, which it was a little awkward because you sit in this room all by yourself for probably an hour or so. No one tells you what's going on. And what I really appreciated our nurses and aides doing was they said, all right, mom, we're going to wheel you down and we're going to pass the NICU on the way to your room so you can see your girls. And I appreciated that so much because, I mean, you don't know what's going on, you know? So, I mean, you couldn't really see anything, but the thought was there to, you know, at least give us the opportunity to kind of see them before going to your room. But once you get to the room without your baby and you hear the cries down the hallway, it just really starts to sink in that just really happened. And I wish that there was a way to separate moms that don't have their babies with them. I think you were saying that earlier that, you know, it would just take some of that stress and fear and just all those emotions away, because sitting there having a little pity party to yourself is not fun.
Yeah. And it's a well-deserved pity party. I just feel like, you know, having been a labor and delivery nurse and a NICU nurse and kind of seeing both sides of it, I've thought that for a long time. Like, can we just put these moms somewhere where there's not crying babies? They're very, very concerned about their sick baby and, you know, not expecting this experience. You know, like I said earlier, nobody puts NICU admission on their birth plan. And so when you're sitting in the hospital and you're hearing these like hearty babies and they're crying, you know, that it's traumatizing. Like it adds another level of stress to the situation.
It is. You're absolutely right. And, you know, on top of having the C-section and, you know, they want to get you up right away as soon as you can and get walk-in and, you know, you walk up and down the hallways and you see the moms with their babies and you're like, this just is not fair. I mean, yeah, obviously it's not your fault. There's nothing you could have done for it, but it does. It hits home and it's so hard to watch. So maybe that's something
I would
think
yes.
Start implementing in the future. Or, I mean, I understand, especially when hospitals fill up quickly. I mean, there's not a whole lot you can do, but if there's a way to separate mom, it would be so helpful.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. And to me, it seems like we could make that change. We could implement that probably fairly easier or fairly easy.
So one thing I did in the moment I did not like, but now looking back, I appreciate is the nurses at UAB were very adamant about trying to pump. You know, they educated us on what to do and how to do it and the benefits of it. And I understand a lot of moms struggle with breastfeeding and struggle with pumping, but I think them explaining the importance of that colostrum and the importance of the breast milk to a premature baby, I mean, it just made me, I'm like, hand me the stuff, like give me
yes.
what I need to do and let's just get going. Cause I felt like that was a way that I could contribute to their care.
Yes.
And I think for a lot of parents, and I have talked to a lot of other parents who just wish that they knew what to do and they wish that they knew how they could help and help contribute. And that's one of the many things that I said. I'm like, if you can pump, pump. If you can't pump, you know, I get it, but what's it going to hurt to try if you can?
Yes.
And we were lucky enough to, well, fortunate enough to have donor milk for all three of our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And once our children were home, I was blessed with being an overproducer, which was amazing with twins. So we were able to give back to the milk bank.
Oh, awesome.
So it came full circle. So that was really nice. But I don't think a lot of moms know what to do with excess breast milk. So some are like, hey, by the way, it's not normal, but if you happen to have a lot, you know, here's a place that you can give back to the NICU babies.
Yeah. I feel like, just to say, I know like with formula shortages going on right now, a lot of moms are just donating to other moms versus going through milk banks. I know like the hospital where I work, we take donor milk or we use donor milk. And if a mom gets milk from like another local mom, they have to sign a consent to use it.
Oh, really? Yeah, I don't think, because I had asked to donate to the hospital that we were at, and they said they have to go through like an actual milk bank that they did not have in their hospital. So we had to donate through a different party.
Yeah.
But as long as it came back, that's really all.
Yeah. I think that's what most people care about, is that it kind of goes back and they, you know, like you're giving kind of back to your community and to babies within your own community. And I think that that's kind of what's important to most people.
Yes. I agree. So one thing that I thought was really interesting that I enjoyed, so my husband's in research, and because we had twins, you know, we were prime candidates for research studies. So
yeah.
We got to do a couple of those. And I think it's so important to remind parents, like, it might not benefit you, but, you know, 10 years down the road, it might benefit someone who's in your shoes. And I really feel like as a NICU parent, it's healing to yourself to give back.
Yes. So
that's just, you know, being able to give back milk, being able to, you know, contribute to research. It's all, in the grand scheme of things, ways that you can help contribute to other parents going
yeah.
through the same thing.
Writing a book is, I mean, that's huge.
Yeah.
To give back. That is so big. And I feel like going through a NICU, and I've always just admired parents who have your attitude and your mentality of like giving back. You know, you've gone through this situation that's absolutely a horrible roller coaster ride. And, you know, to say, how can we give to parents in the same situation versus walking away from the situation and just feeling sorry for yourselves, like you're doing something to make it better for someone else. I think right. That's really amazing.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
So we, I think one thing I did not realize is a lot of NICU parents have PTSD. You know, you always think of, you know, military having that, you know, you don't think of something like childbirth being traumatic and causing you to have issues later on down the road. And I don't really feel like I felt that way with my girls, but when my son was born and went through the NICU, I feel like all those old feelings snap back real fast, and the smells and the sights and just it that is what it is. It's PTSD, and that's a hard thing to get through. And once we went through that, my husband's like, you know, we have to give back, and we've got to find something that we can contribute to all the people that helped us go through it and help other parents kind of cope with their own journey. So that's what inspired our love letter to the NICU community. And what I love about our book is we used a lot of our NICU photos to create the illustrations. We sent them to our illustrator, and she did an amazing job putting them together. But we included a few of our NICU staff, so our NICU nurses that we absolutely loved, and our neonatologists and our pediatrician. Like, we just felt like that was just an easy way for us to say thank you to them for all the things that they did for us. Because I feel like it was more than just taking care of our babies. I mean, they helped take care of us. I mean, you guys have a double job. You really do. You have to take care of the baby and, you know, all the health things that go with that. But you also kind of have to do some mentoring and some therapy sessions with these parents that are just dealing with probably the worst days of their lives.
And that's no stretch of the truth. It's a lot of having to talk parents off of this psychological ledge. I mean, we're working with people's children, and, you know, I've had to remind my coworkers sometimes, like, we are working with people's children. This is the most important person to them, and they're terrified. And, you know, if parents come across as being angry, we have to understand that they're scared. Getting into that, like, that psychological component of it, I really wish they would give us all psych degrees, like hospitals.
I mean, you deserve it. I can't imagine the stories that you have to tell from other parents, because it's, I mean, it really is. When people ask, you know, how the birth of my twins went, it's the worst day of my life. It really was. It was terrifying.
Well, and like having to wrap your brain around, this was the worst day of my life, and it was supposed to be the happiest.
Right, right. And then all the days that followed it. So when our girls were born, they had, one of them had a brain bleed. The other one had ROP and a scratched retina. And, you know, they were jaundiced and had to go into the blue lights. And it just, you know, seeing them with breathing tubes. So it was so nice to be able to hold our kids for the first time. It took about 6 days before I could hold my oldest. It's really hard because they have all these tubes and these wires, and you can't just naturally pick them up like you would like to as a mom. And the whole time you're terrified that you're going to break them because they're so tiny, or you would move the wrong way, or, you know, our nurses would continuously move their oxygen mask closer to them. And it was so uncomfortable. And I honestly did not feel like a mom. I did not have my mom moment until you know, a month in when I was able to hold both of my girls at the same time. I don't know if that's like a multiples thing. But I did not feel that way until they were both together. And of course they reached over and grabbed each other's little hands and you're just sitting there like, this is my mom moment. It's so wonderful.
I love it. I do think that's a multiple thing, being able to hold the babies together. And I, you know, you were talking about not feeling like a mom. I know, like, Rebecca has talked on the podcast about being able, one of her favorite things is being able to be there for that moment when parents say, like, I really, this has made me feel like a parent. And you were kind of touching on one of the things that is my favorite about being a NICU nurse, and it's watching parents progress to being terrified to touch their babies, to being right. confident parents. Like, right. I love at the end of a NICU stay when parents come in and they pick their baby up, they take the temperature, they're changing the diaper, changing the clothes, picking the baby up, getting comfortable in the chair, and they're like ready to go home. And watching that process from the beginning of like, can I touch the baby? And you're like, right. well, or I say, this is your baby. Of course you can touch your baby. And just like watching that is just my favorite.
It's a beautiful moment. And I, you know, I almost tear up a little bit every time I see another NICU mom post their picture online, like, this is our first hold. And I'm like, that is such a huge milestone to be able to hold your baby for the first time.
It's so big.
It's so big. And it's just, it's one of those good moments. And, you know, some moms, they have more good moments in the NICU and some don't have too many. So you really, our biggest thing was to just rejoice in every victory that you can.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the NICU being such a roller coaster of emotions, you know, one day's great and then all of a sudden things change and they're not so great anymore. And you just, you have to hold on to those moments.
Yeah.
So I'll never forget before we had those moments with both of them, I was holding one of my daughters, and this was when we were in the step down NICU, the continuing care nursery is what they called it. She coded on me while I was doing kangaroo care.
Oh gosh.
And she went limp and gray, and that moment I don't think will ever get out of my mind. And I mean, you want to talk about trauma. You know, you're used to all the beeping and the alarms by that point, but you know, when the big alarms go off and all the people rush in and they start working on your kid, I mean, it's terrifying.
It is.
And it's something you won't ever forget.
Yeah. You don't forget that. And you don't forget, again, you know, trying to bridge that gap between the NICU professionals and parents and people in the community. You know, I have always been so mindful of the things that I say in those situations. And especially because skin to skin kangaroo care is supposed to be this like beautiful, comforting thing. And when a baby's heart rate drops and they're on their parents and the parents can feel the baby just kind of like go limp, reaching in and getting the baby and putting the baby into the crib or the incubator to try and like recover that heart rate, you know, at having other professionals come over to help, I'll usually say something to the effect of, okay, mom was kangarooing, like get a clue. Don't say, like, be mindful of what you're saying. This is terrifying right. to mom.
Right.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. So I had talked to a few of my NICU mom groups online and kind of asked them things that they wish nurses or, you know, their providers had said, or things that you wish they hadn't said and things that they wish they did or didn't do. And the biggest thing is communicating and being mindful of the things that you communicate. I mean, we are all people. I don't think, you know, you're human. Things come out naturally that you don't mean. And, you know, in moments like that, when you know, you're scared and you have all these emotions and these thoughts and you don't know what's going on as a parent, being mindful of what you say in front of them is so important, because we remember everything.
Everything.
Too, but I mean, things that you say hold so much weight because, you know, we are just waiting for the next bit of information.
Yeah.
We were fortunate with our girls. We had our own private, you know, it was so nice. But with my son, so he was born at 37 weeks and he had fluid in his lungs and had some breathing difficulties. And so he went to the NICU, which is a whole nother story on its own.
Yeah.
But he was in like a communal space and you could hear everything. And something, you know, the family dramas that come in and, you know, late at night, the nurses get cozy with you and, you know, they start sharing things and you're like, oh, I don't know, you know, there's gossip going on.
You're either like, you just kind of like, tell me more, or you're like,
like, I didn't need to know that. Yes, you really have to gauge, you know, who you're dealing with. So
yes.
After talking with some of these NICU moms, you know, before I was coming on here, I wanted to get some of their opinions. And I think, especially for the parents that are on a longer NICU stay, I think being able to communicate things to them, I think some of them said that the nurses were trying to explain things to them like it was their first day all over again. And I think they were kind of insulted by it, which I think their intentions were good. But, you know, knowing who you're talking to, which you guys have a lot going on, so it's difficult to do. But just being mindful of the things that you say and how you say them have so much weight to it.
Yeah, I think that is feedback that I've heard as well. And I'll, you know, when I'm orienting people, when I'm discussing with families, you know, I ask the families, you know, kind of like there's a way to gauge where families are. And I think that's really valuable feedback. And right. I think I do kind of wish that there was a way for us to get feedback from the communities so that we can improve our practice. Not every family is the same. And there are families that have been here in the NICU for a month, 2 months, 3 months. And we shouldn't be talking to them like this is day one again.
Right, right. I agree. And so another thing I think they had talked about is, you know, communicating well. Some nurses, I think they said, were a little bit overbearing in the way that they like to do things.
Yeah.
And not explain, which, you know, you're in your own right. That's your zone. That's what you do every day. You have your way of doing things. But I think if you don't communicate those things to the parents, they don't know what they can do and what they can't do and what the ways you like them. And that's fine. But, you know, then you get, I guess some nurses got upset that you did things a certain way. Or I remember there was a time we had pretty consistent nurses on who would take care of us each week. And we had a couple that, you know, they got used to us taking the babies out on our own and sitting down and just doing our own thing. And I had one come in asking, why did you take that baby out without asking me? And I felt like I did something wrong. I was like, oh no, I'm in trouble. And, you know, I don't know if there's a way to chart it where mom has done this before or something, but I feel like something along those lines would be so helpful. That way you can say this family, not so much the babies hit milestones, but this family as a unit has hit this milestone. So don't make them feel bad for.
Yeah. I think that's
the parent.
I think that's good feedback. That's really good feedback. You know, like I said, I like that progression of families have gone from being terrified of their baby and touching their baby to getting comfortable and coming in and picking the baby up. And I have taken care of babies that are intubated and maybe mom and dad are comfortable enough to pick the baby up and get settled skin to skin. Like, honestly, that's our goal, is to get you comfortable. Right. And I think sometimes too, you know, as nurses, we need to realize that these are not our babies.
Right.
Like at the end.
And
yeah.
It's so difficult to feel like you're a parent in the NICU. A lot of times, you know, with feeds, you know, I couldn't nurse my twins because they were on a feeding tube and we tried and it wasn't working. And so I was like, I can pump, I can read the numbers and I know exactly what I'm doing. But, you know, trying to bottle feed, I think bottle feeding for one of my girls was the hardest milestone we had to get through. She really just wasn't getting it. Our speech therapist was so frustrated with her. She's like, I don't understand. What's wrong with your kid? I mean, she didn't say it, but she just, you know, we struggled with feeding, which I'm sure you see often.
Often, yeah.
And trying to make it to those feeds when you're coming from home and, you know, you show up on time, but the nurses started early and, you know, which I get, you've got other patients and you've got things that you have to do, but I'm like, I made it on time. You told me it would be at 8 o'clock. I got here at 8 and I missed it. Like, things like that, I wish were communicated a little better. And it really just depends on the person.
I understand that feedback. And I think there's so much that we need. Like, we've come very far in neonatal care,
right.
But I think that we still have a lot farther to go. And I think that we do need to be more therapeutic with families. You know, we're teaching you to be comfortable with your babies. And, you know,
we're not.
And, you know, if it means like, okay, yeah, I have to get my care round started a little bit early. So maybe I'll do everything except for feed the baby.
Right.
And then I'll wait an extra, I'll usually tell parents, I'll wait until 5 minutes after and then I'll get started. But again, that's communication. And I think we could be more therapeutic with families. And I think a lot of that comes from me having seen both sides of it. Again, like I've seen that emotional meltdown after mom comes from the NICU and she's in her postpartum room alone. And, you know, then I've seen at the bedside parents getting very upset because they were on time. Like, what do you mean I was on time? I told you I was going to be here. So
I called 15 minutes before I got here to make sure you don't make it. It's just, it crushes you. And it's such a weird thing. You're like, well, you can just get the next feed. It's like, but I wanted like
this.
I tried. I did my best. I did what I was supposed to do. But, you know, that's the nature of the NICU.
Yeah.
Things don't go like you expect them to. And that's okay. But I appreciated how you said, you know, you have to remember that they're not your babies. But I think it's so great when a nurse treats my baby like their baby. Like, I want that. I want someone to take care of my kid that is going to do everything they can to help them over just say, I'm just here until 6 o'clock and I'm clocking out.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate that too. I love working with nurses who care about these babies, you know, tremendously. And it shows it,
right.
You can tell who's there until 7 and who's there to really care about these patients. And I do work, I think NICU is just full of very highly passionate professionals. How long were your girls in the NICU?
So my baby B came home at 60 days, so 2 months. And baby A took a few more weeks. So she came home at 78 days, which we were before our due date. So I'm going to say we did really well.
Yeah, that's great.
That was really, really good. We struggled a little bit because my husband had moved back to our hometown. And so we were doing a lot of back and forths and he was 4.5 hours away and, you know, trying to get him in to see him. And then it's so crushing when you're so close at the end and, you know, oh, baby might come home on Thursday. And so we had to skip, okay, you better be here on Thursday. Like, you make sure that you've got time off. And baby DSATs. And you're like, no.
7 more days.
Oh, yes. And so it just kept prolonging. And it's crushing, especially when you see babies going down the hall. And they're, you know, bye. They're having their nice homecoming thing. And you're like, that should be us. I don't understand.
Yeah.
And we had it easy. So, you know, parents really do have to look on the bright side of things. But I think as, you know, for nurses and doctors, just saying, you know, you're doing good. Like, you're on the right track. You just got to persevere and we'll get through this together because those last few days are hard.
Yeah. I know I sometimes it depends on the parents and the families, but in talking to families that ask, what can we expect? You know, I feel like some families, they want to know small tidbits like, okay, so this is where we're at right now. For this step, what does it take to move on to the next step? And other parents want a full picture. What is all of this going to look like? And for those parents, I will say, okay, the hardest part is right at the end.
Right.
It's completely up to the baby, and it's going to be feeds, and it's frustrating. It's like two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, one step back. So I do think that, you know, it's funny that you brought up the feeding component of it, because there are definitely parents where I'm like, okay, that's going to be the hardest part.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That, I mean, it definitely was, especially for baby A. I mean, I was trying not to get frustrated with her baby. I'm like, just eat. That's all you have to do is eat. And she just, you know, some babies just take a little longer.
Yeah.
So what I hope providers would remember is for moms that do have, well, moms and dads that have multiples, is to early on maybe say there's a chance that they will not come home together.
Yes.
Because I think that was another really difficult thing, to take one home and leave the other one there. I mean, it was almost worse, because before they had each other.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then you're really alone in the NICU now. Like, we have to leave you and go home with this other baby. And as soon as we got home, I told my husband, I said, we have to go back. Like, we just left her. And he's like, we can't go back. We'll go back tomorrow. And I'm like, you just feel so wrong as a parent.
Yeah. Just like, this is my favorite baby that I took home.
I am, really. Yes. And so now, you know, my girls, since we've made the book and, you know, they have something visual that they can look at and say, oh, that's what you meant by we were in the hospital when we were born. You know, my girls are competitive. I don't think that's uncommon for twins. And so, you know, one's like, I came home before you did. And I'm like, no. So for the rest of their life, we're going to have.
Yeah. The one's like, yeah, but I was born first.
That's exactly, that's the story that we go through. So it's very interesting to see. With my son, so he was born at 37 weeks, and I was thankful to get to hold him right after he was born. That was a big one for me, especially not getting to do that with my girls. I was so thankful for that. But the nurses had taken him and said, we're going to run some tests with him. And then he just never came back. And then they said, well, we're going to take you to the other room. We're still, you know, he's going to do a little NICU time. And I just wish, you know, and of course they probably did not know that I had previous NICU babies and were trying to downplay it, but I wish someone would have, you know, just come out and said, this is what's going on. There's a chance your baby might not, you know, might have to stay a few days, because that brought all those old emotions from my twins back, and it was hard.
I bet that was hard, because you were expecting this baby to stay with you. Like, here he is full term. And the disappointment of thinking that you're going to have this quote normal experience, and then he just like makes his way to the NICU.
Yeah. I was so mad. I think I went through all the stages of grief in a very short amount of time with him. I felt so disappointed in myself, and I felt guilty, which of course is not your fault. I think that is probably one of the best things that providers can tell a parent, is it is not your fault.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I find myself saying that to so many parents. And I just did a write-up for school where, you know, it was basically, the question was, you're counseling a mom and she's asking questions about her medications. And I had stated right in my response, you know, I feel like these questions about medications are questions where mom is trying to find some way to blame herself, and it doesn't matter. Like, you can do everything absolutely right and a baby can still make it to the NICU. This is not your fault. You didn't do anything to make this happen. And this is, there are things as a parent that you're going to feel guilty about down the road and say, oh, I shouldn't have done that. This is not the place to start.
Right, right. And that's all. I remember coming home, and after we finally got all the, you know, billing and paperwork through, I just like went through each and every page, like, what did I do? What did I do? I mean, it's, I think that's just nature. And,
yeah.
You know, you just want answers, and you don't always get answers.
Yeah.
And you have to be, you kind of have to be okay with, I mean, thankfully all of our children came home, so I have that, you know, to chalk it up to, but I can't imagine, you know, losing a child, which, you know, we made sure that we put loss in our book because I wanted to touch on that. It's very, I think it's harder if you don't say something about it. I think it means a lot more to a parent if you do mention the fact that there was this existence.
Yes.
So, you know, talking with a mom that had lost one, I mean, it's just a lot.
It is a lot. It's really, it's a lot. And that grief that comes with that. And there's a certain amount of grief that just comes with having a NICU baby. You know, you kind of touched down on going through a grief process, and you lost that normal experience with your son. And, you know, there's no reason to, I think, downplay what you lose in having that NICU experience. Even though your babies came home and they're healthy, beautiful children, it shouldn't be downplayed just because they came home.
Right, right. And I think it's important too for, you know, to remind parents, especially the ones with, you know, the full-term babies that go into the NICU, you know, they might have a shorter stay, but I don't think those feelings really changed for them. I mean, we went through the premature stage and we went through the full-term stage, and it was awful both times.
It's awful.
Yes, the grief and, you know, the feelings like I messed this up, and, you know, the uncertainty and the fear, it's all still there no matter how long your baby's in the NICU.
I 100% agree with you. And, you know, we will sometimes get like blood sugar babies that pop in for 24, 36 hours, and they go back out to newborn with their moms. And, you know, it's still just as awful.
Right.
It's
and
just
I see a lot of, well, I wouldn't say a lot of, there are some parents that think that full-term babies don't belong in some of these NICU groups. And, well, you didn't have it as bad as we had it. And it's strange because, I mean, no matter what, you went through a traumatic experience.
Yeah.
You cannot compare one experience from another because they're all different.
Yes. And it's, it's bad. Like having a NICU baby is, it's awful no matter what. And I sometimes think having a full-term baby in the NICU in some ways is worse because you were definitely not expecting this.
Like, no, we don't... I felt like that was my second chance and I got robbed of it.
Yes. That's absolutely, I think, how I would feel. Like, hey, I got robbed of this. Yeah, like you're expecting that normal experience and it doesn't happen, and nobody comes into your antepartum room to counsel you about NICU when you have a full-term baby. But when you have premature babies, sometimes dad gets to go over and at least see the NICU before that's where the babies are. And I'm not saying that that makes it better, but there's some sort of anticipated guidance with premature babies.
Right.
Where full-term babies, it's like, okay, they have to go. They have to go to the NICU. Surprise. And parents are like, the NICU, like, we don't even know what that is.
Right. We had my son at a different hospital, so they did things differently. And so in our first hospital, they were so good at educating and saying, this is what this term means. And, you know, they gave us a binder on, like, you know, you can look up all the terms that you need to. You know, all the answers were in that book. Well, not all of them, but many. And I didn't get that with my son. I mean, thankfully, we had been through it before, so I kind of knew the routine. But if I had just been thrown in there without any kind of pep talk or any kind of information, I mean, that's a lot to take in. You know, he had, you know, the oxygen mask and the breathing tubes and the feeding tubes, and you know, to see your baby, I mean, he was huge. So to see him in an isolette was just entertaining. But, you know, it's weird. It's weird that you don't get that educational side to it. And I think maybe that's something that we can implement. I don't know.
Yeah, I think we could definitely be better about educating parents on their full-term babies. Because I think sometimes, too, as professionals, we're like, oh, he's just a transient tachypnea of the newborn. He'll be gone in 2 days. No big deal.
I wouldn't say the joke of the NICU, but they're like, he's the big one, you know? Yeah. I mean, which he was. He's a giant. He still is a giant.
How big was he? How much did he weigh?
So if we would have went full all the way, I think he would have been humongous. But he was 8'7".
Okay.
And that was 3 weeks early. So I think he was on track to be a very large baby.
Yeah.
We had an extremely traumatic birth with him. Apparently I had precipitous labor. So he was supposed to be a scheduled C-section, and we were waiting for the team to get in to prep the OR, and it was in the middle of the night. So we just were having a good time until all of a sudden it was not a good time. I went from 2 centimeters to fully dilated in like 5 minutes.
Okay.
And it was one of those, we have to get her into a room, and there was screaming and running down the halls, and people, you know, nurses were shouting at each other and could not get the epidural. You know, it was a lot. It was traumatic. I think it might have been more traumatic than my first birthing experience. Just things did not go the way that they were supposed to go. And that's just, you know, as a parent, you just have to say, I had a birth plan and it didn't work out. And that's okay. But my nurses were amazing. I mean, they came into the room. I think we were the buzz of the hospital for a few days, and I had a lot of nurses come in and say, I've never had that happen before. You know, I've been doing this 37 years, and I've never got to see that, so thank you. And
yeah.
You're welcome.
You're welcome for that.
You're great. That was awful. But they were so nice to come check in and just make sure we were okay and make sure we were not fully traumatized from it, which we were, but nurses have like the best hearts. They really are.
Thanks.
You guys are just the best.
Thank you. Yeah.
Oh my God. So is there something you wish parents, I guess, that might be listening would know to say or do with their nurses?
I do. I just want parents to feel comfortable advocating for themselves and for their babies, you know, instead of thinking that you have to come in and just sit and listen. And if there's something that you're thinking, just let us know. Just tell us.
Right.
You know, when you come in and you're comfortable picking up your baby and somebody walks over and they say, like, why'd you pick them up? And, like, advocate for yourself. Just say, well, because I'm their parent and I'm comfortable doing this. Like, right. Just be okay asking questions. Be okay to speak up for yourselves. You know, I try to relay this at the bedside to the parents and that I take care of, that the best thing that you can be is an advocate for your baby.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think knowing that you are an active participant in your baby's care is huge. I mean, those first few days we sat there like, what do we, like, can we touch them? What do we do? I don't know. Like, can I put my finger in there? Like, do I need to wear gloves? Like, what do we do? And, you know, having a nurse come in and just say, this is what's going on. This is what we can and can't do. Like, and even saying you can't do something, I think might be a little harsh. Maybe at this time we're not able to do this, but maybe we can try that. You know, give them alternatives. Like, you can't hold your baby, but, you know, some nice soft hand holding or caressing or something is super helpful. It's all about how you say things.
100%. Yeah. 100%. I feel like I learned that very, very quickly. In the beginning, it's all about how you say things.
All about it.
And I had a parent tell me that, and that was more important than coming from, like, I don't know, my manager. Just tell me that you didn't like my delivery, and I'll change that. I just have to be aware of how to approach each individual family. I think, and
yeah,
Yeah, that all just kind of goes back to that advocacy and like absolutely speak up for your baby, speak up for yourself. It's okay to also kind of question what we are doing. You know, if you see somebody doing something one way and then another person doing it another way, yes, we all do things differently, but also as a parent, it's okay to ask us why.
And I think a lot of parents, so after talking to them in the groups yesterday, a lot of parents are, I mean, they feel like they're doing something wrong. They don't want to question them and insult them by, you know, thinking that they're questioning their authority. And then other parents said they did say what they wanted and they weren't being heard. No one was listening. They did not take their opinions into consideration. And I feel like that's just, you know, it depends on your provider and how they do things, but it is something, especially maybe seasoned providers that have been doing it a long time and you're set in your ways, maybe just try to step back and say, I get what you're saying. Let's maybe take your opinions into consideration and see how we can work together.
Yeah, and I think that's a big goal of mine. And, you know, I talked earlier about us growing as professionals. Yes, again, we've come a long way in providing neonatal care, but we still have a long way to go. And I think part of that is including parents in the interdisciplinary team. And, you know, parents, if you can't make it to the bedside for rounding, interdisciplinary rounds, how can we make that happen? Can I FaceTime you so that you can be in this interdisciplinary round so that we can come up with a plan for this baby? Because ultimately, the parents are the ones who have to take this baby home, and they should be considered and included in this team.
I agree.
Yes.
So that one of our biggest reasons for creating our book was, you know, this first week or two, you know, it's all kind of a jumbled mess. Things are happening very quickly. Things can happen very quickly. And, you know, a lot of times you aren't able to hold your child. And reading has so many great benefits, just talking to your children, singing to your children. But my husband especially found reading to be his way of coping with our situation. And I mean, it has increased neurological development and increased soothing and decreases stress. And their stats always were so much better. And, you know, it really helped us bond with them. And I still feel, you know, it's a tradition, like a habit that we just kind of formed, and we've done it with all of our kids. And we still to this day sit at home before they go to bed and read a book together. And it's such a great habit to get into.
It is. It
And
is.
they have.
You know, you talk about being able to bond with your babies, and I think reading to them is great on so many levels. You talk about the neurological development, their SATs are, you know, their vital signs, they're calm. Babies recognize your voice, and they recognize dad's voice from talking to you while you were pregnant with them. And, you know, that reading and hearing your voice gives them something familiar to listen to. And it's bonding, it's so important. And I feel like you can talk to your babies, but a lot of parents are like, what do I say to my baby?
It's true. And thinking, you know, when especially in the communal areas, I'm like, you know, I don't have that great of a, I mean, I can carry a tune, but I don't know anybody that's signing up to hear me sing anytime soon. So you feel uncomfortable doing it, but I feel like reading a book, and it could be anything. I mean, you really could just read your emails to them. I don't think they would really notice, but you know, just having that verbal connection, it helps with their language. My girls, I think, started talking in fragments, you know, at 18 months. And they were way behind in, you know, physically. We ended up having to have physical therapy when they were two. I mean, they spoke so well, and I really attribute that to us reading to them every day.
So I've noticed since we have cell phones that have the access to internet and games and apps, I found myself a lot of times kind of gently guiding parents, like when you're feeding the baby, maybe talk to the baby instead of playing a game on the phone, because it does develop language. You're developing language skills right from the beginning when you start speaking to your children.
Right.
During feeds, reading books. Yeah, I really appreciate that you took your experience and you're sharing it with other parents and you're reaching out and creating awareness and a support system for other NICU parents. I think that's so wonderful. And I think anybody who can take a tragic or difficult situation and turn it into something good, like it, that just amazes me every single time.
I mean, it's definitely not something I had planned on doing after graduating college. I never thought I'm going to write a book and be an author. But I mean, it really was the perfect way for us to give back, especially for my husband. Like that was, reading was his biggest thing. I mean, that was dad's way of contributing. I would pump and he would read. And that was just kind of our way of bonding with our kids. And so, yeah, I mean, I love that we created the book, and I love that we made it a keepsake. I feel like our nurses were so cool. They just said, you know, when it was time to go, they're like, here, you know, make sure you save this blood pressure cup, or here, you know, yeah. Oh, this one fell on the floor, you know, and, you know, really they just wanted to give us a, you know, a keepsake. I made shadow boxes for each one of my kids that have, you know, their oxygen mask or, you know, their blanket that they had in there. And it's really just the little things like that that kind of give a parent something to hold on to. And so we made our book a keepsake. That way, you know, they could write their own journey in it and their milestones. And we had signature pages in the back. That way, you know, the nurses and the doctors and their therapists could all sign it. And that way they could remember, you know, these people brought our babies home. Like, you are the reason my kids made it. Because without modern medicine, you know, we wouldn't have kids. And it's scary to think that way.
It is really scary to think that way. I can just remember starting as a NICU nurse and my grandma saying to me, like, how little are the babies? And, you know, her telling me a story about a friend of hers that had a baby that was, you know, so many weeks early. And it, to me, I was like, that's not even that early. 30 weeks is not that early. And she was like, in 1950, babies that early didn't get to go home. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's crazy. They go home now.
Yeah. So, I mean, day one, we shared a room with a baby that was less than a pound before they got their own room. And I think starting off my perspective that way, I'm like, we're good. Like we're going to be fine. You know, 2.5 pound, we're great. Like we are on the scale.
Yeah.
And I worried so much for that baby. And I still, to this day, I don't know what happened. I don't know the outcome of that child, but you really have to just take every teeny tiny victory that you have, every little thing, and just hold on to it for what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I was telling you a little earlier, I read the book to my daughter who's young, she's school aged, and it really brings people into the NICU world. You're really isolated in neonatal intensive care. So many people think that babies are born early and they're just tiny. That's it. They're just small. They're just growing so they can get home, without really understanding what a critically ill baby looks like and what that's like for parents. And, you know, reading it to my daughter, I think, gave her a little bit of perspective on what I do and what is it like for parents to have a sick baby.
Right. It's terrifying.
It's really scary.
So one thing that we did include in our book, there's a nonprofit called Beads of Courage.
Yes.
And so we have this growing strand of beads throughout our book. And that might be my favorite keepsake that we took home for my girls. If you haven't heard of it, they basically give you a bead for every needle stick or therapy and surgery, you know, tests. They give you a bead. And so by the end of your stay, you have this crazy long strand of their medical history that they went through. And so every time my girls see it, they're like, these are my beads and I'm strong and I have courage. And I'm like, how empowering is that for a child to see, you know, what they went through? It's such a great program.
Yeah.
And they have it for more than just the NICU. I mean, I think they have it for cancers and heart issues and lung issues. So it's that if your hospital does not have it in the program, it's definitely worth looking into.
Yeah. I'll share their website when I post this episode so people can take a look at Beads of Courage. I think it's really important to have those community support systems and really, looking at the long term. I mean, your girls, they get to say, look at what I survived. I did this.
They've got it like up in their room and they just think that they are the coolest thing.
They're kind of the coolest thing though.
They really are. I'm like, do you really like, I know they don't comprehend what each bead means, but I mean, it is such a precious keepsake to me. And they're like, can I wear it? You know, I'm going to get dressed up. And I'm like, no, you can't. Like, I don't want you wearing it everywhere because I don't want you to break
it. I don't want you to lose it.
Right. I mean, now they're old enough that they're fine. But, you know, that for a while, I was like, please don't eat them. Like, we need, that's correct. So, but I mean, I loved including them in the book. And, you know, through our journey of becoming, an author, I've just met so many wonderful people that have kind of done the same thing. It was hard when we had our kids in the NICU to find a book that we could read to them about the NICU. And I think in the past couple years, parents have realized that and have started doing what we did and making their own books. So Adam Wood did Our Preemies Adventures, which was really great. And Sharifa Brown did My Early Surprise and We Are Always With You. I mean, there's just so many great books that you can look up.
I have We Are Always With You. That was one.
Beautiful.
And then I recently grabbed, because I've just been pulling all of the NICU books that I can find since starting the podcast. And the other one I like is My Baby's a Superhero.
Yes.
That one's so cute.
That's a good one.
That one's really cute.
One thing that I know COVID kind of changed things, but I know some NICUs are trying to implement like a NICU library.
Yes.
To have books for their parents to read. And, you know, some parents are looking for ways to give back. And I think it's a great way, you know, find a book. It doesn't have to be a NICU book. I mean, obviously our book's amazing. But
for sure.
You know, any book, any children's book, any kind of book that, you know, could be donated. So these parents have something to read, I think is extremely helpful. Or even, you know, we keep our ebook free on Kindle. That way parents can read at bedside. I think there's like thousands of books that you can download for free.
For free.
To read.
Yeah.
And it's such a great way that, you know, if a parent is just looking lost, like they don't know what to do, maybe suggest, you know, why don't you try reading a book to them?
Yeah. And for parents that are looking to do something for the NICU, I think donating books is such an excellent way to give back. And it's a relatively inexpensive way to kind of give back.
Right. We were in the hospital on Easter and one of the families had given books to all the parents. And I'll never forget. I got, The Crown on Your Head by Nancy Tillman. And I don't know if you've read that, but I mean, every time to this day that I read that, I'm like, that's just such a nice story. And that's, I mean, it's such a beautiful way to give back through encouraging words.
Yeah, my daughter and I have recorded her and I reading some books, and every once in a while I'll pick up a fussy baby and I'll have my phone in my lap and I'm like, I don't really know what to talk about, but here, listen to us reading this book.
Sweet. That is really nice. That's the kind of thing that, you know, you really appreciate your NICU nurses for. I mean, that's you taking time when you didn't have to sit there and cuddle a baby and spend time with them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they need it.
They do need it.
Yeah.
They do need it.
Thank you so much, Sarah, for joining me on our podcast. I really appreciate it. And I really hope I really hope that, you know, talking with NICU parents helps to bridge the gap and help us grow more as professionals.
Well, I just want to say thank you and thank all of the NICU community for taking care of these fragile babies. I mean, it's hard. So without you, we would have nothing, but because of you, we have everything, and we are just forever grateful.
It is my absolute pleasure. So thank you again.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks.